Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
What's up, bingers? It's hump day, and we are just days away from CrimeCon, where I will be presenting True Crime Binge live. If you're going to be in Austin this weekend, definitely look me up. And keep your eyes peeled on all of my social media, because we'll definitely be doing some fan meetups outside of the conference. So if you're not going to the conference, but you happen to be in the Dallas area, stay tuned. Check out my Twitter and my Instagram, both at Bob Ruff Truth and at True Crime Binge. And for today's episode, I have a really cool guest for you. She is the host of the Dialogue podcast, my new friend, Rebecca Sebastian.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge.
Okay, as I was saying before we started recording,
took care of business.
Yeah, so Rebecca and I were just discussing how we're both going to be. I'm leaving for CrimeCon the day after this airs. What time are you going? So this is going to air next Wednesday.
Oh, same. Yeah, I'll arrive Thursday.
Yep, me too. So we're leaving at 7 a.m. on Thursday, which means
ouch.
Yep, have to get all the recordings for the week done ahead of time. Which normally,
yeah, exactly,
not a huge deal, but as I was saying, I completely screwed myself because I was on vacation last week. It was a trip that I had planned a year ago and before I knew about CrimeCon. So I had to do all that doubling up, get everything ahead of time before that trip, got back, and now I have one quick week to make up for that and make up for the next week. So, and I spent my morning today doing my annual workers comp audit, which was fun that I
sounds painful. That makes me like have a stomach ache. Yeah, so you're feeling it doubly, and it's like you probably really needed that vacation, but you now are kind of paying for it. It's like that trade-off, like, I think that was worth it.
Yeah, it's tough in this business, and I want to get into how you got into this business, but it's...
Yeah, sure.
Because it's just like anybody who's self-employed, right? They're like, you're the boss. You can leave whenever you want, but like, vacations cause me so much anxiety and stress that it's unbelievable, because all you're thinking about is how far behind I'm going to get and what deadlines am I going to miss and on and
exactly.
On.
It's a different kind of stress. When you are employed by somebody else, you can take vacation, and depending where you work, you still might get all those emails and contact. You know, really it varies wildly for people. But when you're self-employed and you go on vacation, it's like, you're that voice and that person, like, giving yourself those, you know, notices and reminders. So it's like there's no reprieve. And like, so, yes, a lot of planning, a little planning will go a long way for you to enjoy. But there's a lot of work to do on the front end to be able to enjoy a vacation. So I feel you. My husband's self-employed, too. So we're like, we kind of just feel like we're always working, like have laptops, will travel is sort of our our MO, and there's some beautiful freedom in that, and there's like some trappings. It's always a trade-off.
Yeah. So are you pretty stoked about CrimeCon?
I am. I'm feeling very excited to just travel. I've taken like one trip since the pandemic. My daughter and I looked at some colleges just last month because she did the whole application process in COVID. So we didn't really see any campuses. So we just went and did a couple last month. So that was really fun. And it just gave me that like, oh, I'm on an airplane. Like, this is so amazing. And I actually hate flying. And I was like running onto the plane. I just was so excited. So I'm excited to go somewhere. I've never been to Texas. I'm excited to start with Austin. I feel like that's a great first entry into Texas. And yeah, I'm going to be on Podcast Row for Dialogue. I'm going to be hosting trivia, which you're going to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And I'm interviewing people for the virtual CrimeCon experience for the audience at home. So I'm going to be busy. Like you, I'll be doing a lot of different things there, but that's how I like it. So yeah, I'm super excited.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Is this your first CrimeCon?
It's my second. I went 2 years ago to New Orleans.
Gotcha. Yep, that one was a good time. I'm not a big fan of New Orleans. I'm pretty excited about Austin. I loved Nashville, and I like Austin. I'm one of the few people that just does not, I don't dig New Orleans at all.
What is it about it?
It's just the city itself. I've been there a few times, and I think I'm too old for it, is what it
well,
is.
Well, I hear that.
Yeah.
It was my first time there. I haven't been to a lot of the South. Like, this is going to really say a lot, I guess, about, I mean, I'm just a Northeast person. It's where I'm from. I'm from New Jersey. I've lived in New York my whole adult life. So I thought New Orleans was beautiful, but I don't drink and I'm old. So for me, it's hard to find a way into that like nightlife. I'm like, give me the spooky house tour and like back in the hotel at 9 and I'm happy. But I'm very excited about Austin. I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, I've only been to Austin. I went to Austin to interview Jason Baldwin a few years ago and I only got to spend one day there, but it's a cool town. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a little time.
Yeah, I think I do. So this is a conversation that could happen off the air. Is there anything going on Thursday? Because as far as I know, I don't have to do anything till Friday.
Yeah, same. No, I'm going to set up a couple things. I arrive like Thursday after. I haven't heard of anything Thursday night, to be honest. So I think I'm going to do dinner with Dr. Shiloh and a bunch of people. So if you guys, is your wife going with you?
She is, yep.
Okay, well, let us know. We're trying to get a dinner planned.
Yeah, this is how podcasters get to arrange, you know, meals and drinks. Yeah. We do it on the air.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. This is like not interesting at all. We can cut this. But yeah, that's all I know of so far for Thursday night. I'm just kind of looking forward to not going right into work. So,
right. You
know, we can ease in Thursday night and then Friday we're going to be off to the races.
Yeah, Friday's going to be crazy. So this is, so Zach, one of our co-hosts from the Friday follow-up episodes is coming with me.
Oh, nice.
And this weekend, the weekend of CrimeCon, is my wife's birthday, and it's Zach and his wife's anniversary.
Oh. So
we're making it like a, the timing's working out well, so we're getting in on Thursday morning, or early afternoon Thursday, and then we'll hang out that night and go do whatever. Friday, my day is jammed. I'm doing two live true crime binges. There's Podcast Row. I'm doing the trivia with you. I'm doing a panel with Sarah Turney.
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, that's nonstop.
I don't know why they did that to me, because then I look at the schedule and it's like Saturday, I have nothing to do. I got to go Podcast Row and that's it.
I know. It's kind of rains when it rains, it pours, but that's good. You'll be freed up Saturday. That's really fun. You guys have a lot to celebrate
mm-hmm.
yep. with your hosts and significant others. That's very fun.
Yep. So let's get into you a little bit. I'm sure everybody doesn't really care what I'm going to be doing this weekend. So you host the Dialogue podcast. Tell me a little bit about your background. Like, where did you come from before you ended up being a true crime podcaster?
Sure. So I'm like my background, like my origin true crime story, or like my just before I started all this
before
craziness
you, what did
that
you,
I do.
Yeah. Like, what was your first real job?
Oh, as an adult. Sorry.
Sure, yeah.
I worked in a toy store when I was 14.
Okay, very good. I see how that could lead you to true crime.
Yeah, I know. Depends on the toys. So I'm in marketing. That's the boring and short answer. I studied acting, so I have kind of a performance acting background, but I minored in communications, thankfully had another skill set. I don't, as it turns out, have a super thick skin, which you really need to really give it a go in acting. And apparently as a podcaster, too.
I say that. How are you doing podcasting? It's so much worse.
You can hide a little more. Like, people don't have to see me cry when I, you know, read some reviews or like feedback, as opposed to auditions where I could like barely hold it together to get out of the room. Yeah. So I've been in marketing and just a big true crime reader, consumer for years and years. And before I started Dialogue, I started Yellow Tape, which is what you're going to be participating in next week. So Yellow Tape is a true crime trivia show. And I just was like, I know so much about true crime. I got to do something with this. This is like so insane and ridiculous how much I know. And, you know, the real story of it is that I'd also given up drinking just for my own mental health. So I was kind of, antsy, honestly, and just a little like bored, and like I needed to change up my schedule. This is like, I don't know if you really wanted all that information, but that's really how Yellow Tape was born. I was like, I need to do something. And so I wanted to do a trivia night where all the categories would be true crime, and I'd pull in true crime fans, and we'd do it for a good cause, and it would be respectful but fun. And that's how that was born. And it was so much fun. So that was 2017, pre-pandemic. So lots of live shows in New York. Then I started doing it at places like CrimeCon and True Crime Podcast Festival, Crime Expos, etc. And what I noticed happening was these conversations would start happening in the audience where they kind of would want to unpack one of the themes or the topics and explore things. And I wanted to as well, but it just wasn't conducive to this 55-minute live performance. I just couldn't figure out how to incorporate that into the format. So I was like, oh no, like, do I have to start a true crime podcast? Because like the world does not need another true crime podcast.
Do I have to do this too? Everybody else is doing it.
Really, it was 2019. It was not a felt need in the world, right? Like you started before this was so saturated. But I did think, you know, if I'm going to do this, I think it has to be a little bit different. And so I thought an interview format might be the way to go. And you're doing that on True Crime Binge. So I set out to do that. I thought, let me explore the conversations that this audience wants in a one-on-one format with people who know what they're talking about. Because Lord knows, like, it wasn't me. I had lots of questions and I was curious, but I don't have all the answers. So I just bring on somebody amazing who knows a lot every week. And we kind of explore these themes that are found in the heart of every true crime story, like justice, injustice, race, wrongful convictions, coercive control, trauma, addiction, you know, really big things that on their own don't sound like true crime. But if you look in most cases you talk about, you can find a lot of those. So that's how Dialogue was born. I say it always, it's kind of like it picks up where Yellow Tape left off.
So tell me more about Yellow Tape, because I was familiar with Dialogue. I've listened to a few of your episodes before, and then I listened to a few more in the last couple of days. But Yellow Tape, I was unfamiliar with. When you asked me to be on the Yellow Tape trivia, I'm like, sure, I don't know what that is, but I'll do it. So it's this trivia thing, but was it ever like a podcast or a YouTube thing, or has it always just been live events?
No, it was always just a live event. I actually, when I had those rumblings about, oh, I think I need to start a podcast, the original idea was, let me translate this to an audio experience and add in a little conversation. And that just fell flat for me. I honestly recorded some and I listened back and I'm like, this is not the same. And maybe I was just too attached to the live experience. I couldn't imagine a listener being super excited about listening to it. I now, having podcasted for a couple of years, feel like I could probably make a Yellow Tape trivia show a listenable audio experience. I don't think I could conceive of how to do that then. But yeah, it's a live show. So people come and they play in a team. So you would come with your friends and you would come up with a team name. And the team names are kind of the most fun part. Like people in New York would come up with the best names. So Hard Knocks Life, Ted Bundy's Type, like they got a little edgy.
Do you want to know my trivia team name? I've never played true crime trivia, but I do play trivia every Thursday at one of our local watering holes here.
Nice.
And our team is called Circle Beef Jerky. There's a lot of thought that has to go into
the trivia. There absolutely is. You know, you've got to come out like strong with a name, show your confidence. You're not playing around. That is, that's a message that you're sending.
It's like a triple entendre. Right?
Absolutely. It's a lot of masculine energy.
There's only two men on our team. The rest are all women. I don't know how we got them to.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really funny. That actually makes me like it even more. So that's how the show is. It's five rounds and people would play from their seats. Now, the way we're doing it, when I do it at big venues and big events, I pull up contestants. It's a little more Jeopardy style.
Uh-huh.
But if you come to a smaller live show, it's much more about the audience experience. And yeah, there's some anecdotes. I do a couple stories. It's not stand up per se, but there's moments where I'll tell some funny stories. And sometimes I'll pull up a guest that's interesting. I don't know if you have the Citizen app. Do you have that in your city?
No. I city.
It's called Citizen.
I live in a rural township. I have to drive to get, to get to a city.
Okay. I actually knew that, but Citizen is kind of expanding. So I didn't know if it'd come to your region, I should say, your region. But it's this, it's an app and it's a crowdsourced crime app. So New York was the first city to have it. And people will hold their phone up if they see something weird going on and record it and then put it onto this app. I don't know entirely how it works. And then people can verify it. And eventually the NYPD will verify, like, yes, this is happening. We're responding. But anyway, the founder of Citizen came to one of our shows and people were freaking out because it was the first year Citizen app existed in New York. So it's just cool, kind of like a safety true crime aspect to the show. So sometimes there's surprises like that. I have little prizes for the audience, but the main draw is always we're making a donation. I always chose the Innocence Project because they're very close to my heart. And that's what we do. It's just true crime for a good cause.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what can I expect on Friday when I sit on this? Because I'm going to win, Rebecca. I don't like to, I'm not good at not winning.
Oh gosh. So you're competitive.
Good chance I'm going to flip some tables over. Things are going to break bad. Me and James are probably going to get into fisticuffs if he starts pulling ahead of me.
This is
so
good.
Are we teams or are these all individuals?
It's like, speaking of workman's comp, let me make sure CrimeCon has us all sign waivers. I am not responsible for any damages. Okay, so yeah, I love a good competitive energy. No, it's going to be independent. So you're playing for yourself. I'm going to have two podcasters up each round, plus an audience member, because I want to engage the audience. And I think they're going to be excited, like, to go against Bob Ruff or Katherine Townsend or, you know, any one of the amazing people playing Yellow Tape that night. And then you'll just be up for one round. You do your best and you won't know the category. And if you're looking for, like, some special treatment or intel today, it's not happening. Okay, not going to give you any hints.
I mean, we say that, but you're going to give me some hints, right?
Offline. Off the air. Not an idiot.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Yeah, so you won't know what the round is, but each round is all around one theme. So it's very luck of the draw. Like, you're either, like, you know, that's kind of the crapshoot of it, is you might know a lot about this one topic or nothing. So that kind of is the fun and what sucks about it. And then the fifth round will pull up the two highest competitors across the four rounds and they'll go face off, no audience member. So if it's you and Dr. Shiloh left with the highest scores, you'll compete face to face for the ultimate champion title in the fifth round. So that's how it's going to work. So give
it your
best.
Will there be a buzzer? Is there going to be a buzzer?
There's handheld buzzers and they're,
yes.
I upgraded them. I am telling you, I've had buzzers at live events that, like, nobody can hear, but the person buzzing it was a disaster. These are like Jeopardy. The first person to buzz in locks out the other people. Like, it's not playing around. It's
I'm
really
so
good
excited
system.
About that. I've always wanted to have a buzzer like that.
Everybody feels that way. I'm so, so excited about it. Also lights up. So there's no discrepancy who is first. Like, we are playing for real. And yes, you're going to get a buzzer and it's going to be awesome.
Nice. And I just remember that I need to get you a headshot, which means I need to get my wife come in here with my iPhone and take a
that
picture
works.
Of my head. And send
yes.
to you to for
the
promotion
shot.
Purposes.
Yes.
Yep. I'll take,
yeah.
I'll take a shot.
A headshot, you know, we can just call it a picture if it makes everyone feel more comfortable. Like,
I like
low
the fact
pressure.
That I'm going to have a headshot here shortly.
Good. You know, me too.
No one's
You're
ever
welcome.
Asked me for one before. You think?
You're welcome. Welcome. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the whole event and meeting you in person. And man, you put together a hell of a panel. Like, when most of those people, I have my list of people I'm reaching out to for True Crime Binge. And so for you listeners, Rebecca sends me in this group email of everybody that's going to be a part of this trivia. I'm like, hey, that's everybody that I want to talk to. So
I know.
And
right?
I booked 3 interviews right off of that email thread.
Well, again, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And I have to say, hosting dialogue has been that's like a big perk, is just getting to know. I know you've probably experienced this. You meet your heroes and you meet amazing guests who become friends, and then you get to call on them to do things like true crime trivia. So I wouldn't say the whole panel's been on dialogue, but a good majority of them, and you're next, my friend, by the way.
Right.
So yeah, it's really fun. I'm so excited for people who've said yes. I'm very grateful. And we're going to play for charity, but I'm going to let the winner decide on where they want the money to go instead of choosing the Innocence Project for them. So everyone's going to get to play for their cause. So that'll shine a light on all these, you know, organizations that the players are passionate about, and the audience can hear what those are. So I'm really excited.
That's incredible. And like I said, super excited to do it. And yeah, the process of, I just posted yesterday, which will be last week now. I had Jason Flom was my guest last week.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah. And when I had him on, then it was even like listening back, and it was just like, this is the coolest thing of doing True Crime Binge has been to, like, every week I sit down and meet new people that have similar interests and that were, you know, in the same industry doing the same type of work. And like Jason Flom's one of my heroes, like getting to know those people. And so now I had a little bit of an advantage coming into this because I started True Crime Binge 5 years into Truth and Justice.
Right.
So I had a little bit of juice to get some of these people to come in and talk to me. But you've managed to have some incredible guests on dialogue. Like how'd you pull that off? Like you know, how do you break into a space? Because you did it so well, broke into a space that you weren't really a part of yet. I mean, you had yellow tape, but you were not in the podcast realm, and then start loading up your show with these incredible guests.
I honestly ask myself the same question. Like, how did I get so lucky? I would love to say it's my winsome personality. I think it's mostly naivete and an audacious boldness in just asking. So I got lucky with my first few guests. And then once you have those, you're like, past guests include, and I was lucky enough, Tara Newell was like number 3.
Right.
Child of God, cult survivor who'd never shared her story anywhere was number 2.
Mm-hmm.
A published author on serial killers who's turned into a great friend, Tori Telfer, was number 1. So then you kind of have a little something to go on. Like, and then you can say, you know, and upcoming are, and anybody who told me maybe, I would include them in the list. Like,
right.
You know, you kind of fake it till you make it. And, you know, I'm happy to say the show has improved over, I'm getting very close to 100 episodes. I think my interviews are getting better, as they should. Mm-hmm. I cringe a little. I don't know how you feel. You've got more experience coming into True Crime Binge. Like, I listen to the older ones and I'm like, oh, that could use tightening up a lot. But I still think like the raw essence of what it was appealing to people. It was a place to come and lift the veil a little bit on their process. Talk about the genre of true crime itself. That was something that nobody else was doing. It was
right.
Not just case focused. It was, what are we talking about when we talk about true crime? And is this okay? And this is entertainment. And how do we feel about it? And how did this start for you? What was the first dark thing you read or watched? And, you know, I think people appreciated having a place to do that. And then not only did I have podcasters, I had experts. So for me, it's sort of like, almost like career day at school. You know, you get to hear what people do. I have tremendous, like, you have an amazing career prior to podcasting in firework. What do you call it?
Firefighting. Firework. I actually like firework. Yeah.
Yeah. Fireworks. It's very fun. You know, I love hearing people's paths. I've had Secret Service agents and polygraph experts. I mean, these aren't people you talk to every day, and yet they're so connected to true crime stories, right? So how does somebody get to the FBI? How does somebody become a polygraph expert? So for me, I think honest curiosity, most people are pretty receptive to. I have to say, I'm almost 100 episodes in. I've gotten like 5-7 flat out no's. Most people say yes, or I get no response. I mean, a non-response is a no, but I'm talking like a no. Most people say, yeah, sure. I mean, people like to talk about themselves too. That helps. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the true crime, the thing for me, it's easy because I do all true crime podcasters. And I think a lot of people don't really, certainly there's some competition built in there, especially on the business side of things a little bit. But for the most part, I don't think people realize what a community true crime podcasters are. Like when you're listening to any podcast and you're hearing a promo for another show, you know, 90% of the time, those aren't paid ads. Those are all of us just like trying to help each other out, you know. Another friend of mine that's in the business will be like, hey, I'm launching a new show. Would you mind doing a promo swap with me? And we're doing this stuff all the time. So it's pretty easy for me to get other podcasters on, because especially with True Crime Ben, because it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a give and take. You're giving me a good interview. I'm giving you some exposure.
Absolutely.
And that was kind of where this whole thing was born for me, was it was during season 9 of Truth and Justice. It was during the pandemic. It was like we were all hurting. And I was like, I need content and you guys need listeners. So do I. It was like, let's just, you know, come on and we'll just do this thing. And it turned into True Crime Binge.
So smart.
But you got into, you get into so many, like a lot of your episodes that I've listened to have not been necessarily podcasters. They were,
right.
You know, there are a lot of experts and, you know, like the case we're going to talk about today, the NXIVM cult, you know, you had somebody, an author who wrote about it.
Yeah, very recently, Sarah Berman was on, who wrote Don't Call It a Cult, which is a great provocative title. It is a cult. Spoiler alert. Some people are like, how dare she? I'm like, she was really thoughtful in choosing that title. If you know, we talk about that in the interview. But to your point about the true crime community before we move on, that is a huge piece of why Dialogue has taken off and why I got guests. I find as a whole, it's a very generous group of people who want to help each other. I think a win for one is a win for all, mostly. I'm sure there's exceptions, but I've only honestly encountered really thoughtful and generous people. And I owe initial downloads to other more experienced podcasters. I'll never forget Moms and Murder said, we'll play your promo. I was like, are you serious? Like they are huge.
Right.
And the nicest women. And they played my trailer, and that I feel like gave me a real boost and a real chance, a fighting chance, because it's hard. It's hard to break in. And now I, of course, co-host a show with Melissa. I don't even know if you know that. We just launched a new show. Yeah. Me and Melissa from Moms and Murder. In February, we launched Criminality, which is about reality TV and true crime. So we're covering crimes that happened to reality stars of like shows we've watched over the years, but they're all very white collar crimes, or mostly it's money stuff. No murder, which is so nice because we both felt like we just need a little lighter content, palate cleanser, but we're having a lot of fun on that show.
That'd be cool. I'll have to have you guys on together to talk about that one.
Oh, fun. Yeah, let's do that.
But, you know, like what you were just describing, I've said for years, Rabia Chowdhury made my career.
Oh my gosh, sure.
When I was sitting in my, you know, the story I've told a million times, that I was sitting in my garden shed with the tractor with the dog shit on the tires recording my little podcast, Rabia started listening to it, and then she started tweeting on it, and then mentioned my show on Undisclosed. You know, I had even had her on as a guest at one point. And then she said, hey, go check this out because he's doing some good work on the case. Everything, but my life changed that day. I mean, the numbers got so big. I was at just a bad point in my other career where I was over being, you know, doing firework.
Fireworks.
Yeah, I was done with the fireworks. But it was 100%. That's what it took, was the generosity and kindness of Rabia of helping support somebody that was doing similar work, and it changed my life. And what's, you know, similar with you with Melissa?
Yeah, Melissa and Mandy of Moms and Murder. So many M's. Yeah, no, it's true. It's amazing. And Rebecca Lavoy did that for me. She was on. I mean, that was probably a year plus into podcasting, but I saw a major spike. Like I was kind of maintaining at that point. And then she was on and spoke highly of the episode and shared it. And I think Crime Writers On listeners are so voracious for
right.
good new content. And her endorsement carries mm-hmm. a lot of weight.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm just humbled by the way people want to pay it forward. And so, yeah. I think that's a great way to operate in any work you do, is to be generous, you know, to the people beneath you, ahead of you, next to you. It's just a good way to be a human.
Yeah, it's a cool space, and that's why I'm really looking forward to getting to CrimeCon and hanging out with everybody.
Same, I know, I can't wait.
So let's go ahead and shift into for those of you listening, I think you're aware of this, but I let our guest every week pick a case that we're going to talk about. I've never been much into cults. I don't know much about them.
Fun.
I did a deep dive into Heaven's Gate. Ooh. In preparation for Jillian Pensavalli's episode when she came on. And then Jillian and I spent an hour talking about dogs.
As does happen. We spent a fair bit of time on dogs as well. Yeah,
which was one of my favorite conversations ever, but we never got around to it. And so, first of all, the first thing I learned about Nexium, after you mentioned it to me and I started researching it, was in the first couple minutes of listening to one of your episodes on, because you got a couple on it.
Yeah.
Is that it's pronounced Nexium, because you sent me, let's talk about NXIVM. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Sure. Let's talk about that. The fuck is that?
I didn't tell you I'm a Latin scholar, and I expect anybody who interviews me to also be one.
So first of all, like, is Nexium just like what people call, like, what is, like, why is it NXIVM?
And it's made up. It's BS. It's a completely fabricated combination of letters to look like something meaningful. It has no meaning. It's just Nexium. There's some theories out there that Nexium does have meaning, but NXIVM they put together to be Nexium, to be cryptic, intriguing, whatever. I mean, this was run by a man who fancied himself the smartest man in the world, so mm-hmm. it shouldn't be that surprising. And they have other Latin terms. I don't know how deep you got in your research, but DOS, the inner circle, the sex cult part, that is Latin for Dominum Obsequius Sororitum, I believe, which loosely translates to master over slave.
Ah.
So yeah, there's Latin like propensity, but I don't think Nexium actually has any meaning.
Is Nexium the Latin pronunciation of that gobbledygook of letters?
I believe so. I guess it would be.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Not, I kind of brushed back up on my Latin. I haven't spoke it for a while. Yeah,
I know. It's that's fair. I mean, God, it's not.
Do I have a Babbel sponsorship in this episode?
Yeah. Duolingo for Latin.
Touch up on my Latin.
Seriously. You know, before it was Nexium, it was actually called Executive Success Program, which is very boring and corporate sounding and very, that like reeks of an MLM. So I think Nexium was sort of the rebrand. It was like, if we're going to really make this be a world domination, let's change it and make it a little more compelling.
Well, that MLM thing was kind of how they drew people into the beginning, right? They had these
totally.
Professional development seminars under the guise of it actually being an MLM.
Exactly. No, it really is at its core a multi-level marketing company.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I should say most MLMs aren't cults. I feel like I should say that. though there's some debate over that at this point. But until the final days, most people signed up for Nexium didn't think they were in a cult. They thought they were in a company where you paid money to be a part of it and you learned things and you climbed the ranks and you got other people to join and you were promoted. I mean, that structure isn't designed only, you know, for nefarious purposes. So most people weren't thinking they were in a cult. So yes, they were just a boring MLM that got really dark because it had some really dark leadership.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about this Keith Rainier. And another one that caught my attention is one of his upper associates that was indicted along with him in 2018 was Allison Mack, who's an actress who she was in what, Smallville? She was in.
Yeah.
Wilfred. I only know her from FX. Smallville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I never saw Wilfred, but I read that she was in that. I saw Smallville. But she was like, well, I mean, she got indicted right along with Rainier in 2018.
Yeah, she did. Her sentencing is actually coming up on June 30th. She's been on house arrest since her arrest. And so I'm very curious about that. It's happening actually at the federal court here in Brooklyn. So I'm really trying to get a press pass so I can get in. I don't know what the COVID restrictions are going to be. But I'm very curious what her sentence is going to be. And what's so interesting about Allison Mack, I think, is that she came in like everybody else did as a member, and she had a lot of potential. They saw in her Keith and other leaders. So she quickly became a leader and ended up being one of the main recruiters to DOS, which is this secret, much smaller sect of Nexium called DOS. So she is interesting to me because she sort of represents the whole, you know, can you be a victim and a perpetrator? Because Keith Raniere really is the mastermind, but I don't think he could have done it without Nancy Salzman, Claire and Sarah Bronfman, and Allison Mack. So I'm always just, as an empath, like, I feel for her. I think she was completely swindled, but she was also a knowing adult who recruited women with deception. She didn't tell them that this women's inner circle was actually Keith Raniere behind the closed doors, who knew everything happening, including the branding. I'm sure you got to the branding, right?
Yeah.
Okay. She knew Keith was part of it. She knew it was his initials and she didn't tell them. And so what is her responsibility? And the other women involved as well. I mean, Claire Bromkman got 81 months, I think. And we know Keith got 120 years. So I'm very curious what the sentence will be. And I'm kind of hoping for a sentence because I think that's fair. But I hope also she gets some help. I think these women need some support and services. And I don't know, it's complicated. I think victim/perpetrator is murky and that you can kind of ride both. And I think she's an example of that.
You know, I had a few years ago on Truth and Justice, we had a listener guest host one of our follow-ups, and she was actually a cult survivor and talked about some of the she as a child kind of started seeing through it much sooner than her parents did.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was so interesting because it doesn't make sense, right? If I'm watching the documentaries on Nexium or Heaven's Gate or anything, it's like Heaven's Gate blows me away because I don't understand the usually you can see what the underlying motive was, like, and so with Nexium, there was sex trafficking and racketeering, and it was all about money, as opposed to like Heaven's Gate, where it's like, why the hell did they even do this? It doesn't even make any sense. But it was the same thing, like her, I feel like the person that was originally recruited into it was kind of brainwashed, which would be her parents in this scenario. They just couldn't get out. They couldn't see it. But her as a child that was, kind of got drugged into it was like, what the hell is going on?
Well, good for her that she had some part of her brain yet left with clarity, because it becomes so normalized when you're raised in the cult that it can be very hard to see. So she's very lucky. And speaking of Heaven's Gate, I actually had a Heaven's Gate survivor on named Frank Lyford, who escaped Heaven's Gate a year before the mass suicide. And I agree with you. I feel the same way because I can relate to Nexium in a weird way. I would never have signed up for sex cult, I like to think. But I would have maybe signed up for some self-improvement. You know, I'm in marketing, executive success program, be better in your work and professional life. Sure.
Right.
There's a time in my life I could see being receptive to it. I don't know if I would have gone all in. Heaven's Gate, I'm like, I just don't get it. But what I'm learning and what I've learned from, again, this is why I started a dialogue I had on Rick Allen Ross and Dr. Yanya Lalik, who are cult experts. Cults are so strategic and smart. The leaders, they tailor their message to the right audience. So Heaven's Gate might not attract you, Bob, and me, Rebecca, because we might not have an affinity for other galaxies and believing there's life beyond this planet. Lots of people do, and they really got their start in the 60s and 70s when that was a real, that was a new way to think, right? That there's maybe a world beyond Earth. And so Frank, this man that I had on, obsessed with UFOs and aliens and thought a lot about life beyond Earth. And so he didn't go to sign up with a cult. He went to an information session on, is there life on other planets? And right. It was the leaders of that cult. And so he's like, yeah, is there? That's a question I'm asking. Then you meet 10 other people who are asking the same questions. It's a slow, gradual process. And each cult really targets their perfect member. They kind of know where they're wasting their time. Like, I'm not going to last there for a minute because I'm like, maybe there is, but it's not interesting to me. So I don't care to spend time thinking about it, which, I mean, I don't know what that says about me, but it's true. So they find the people who are just really interested in that and want to learn more. And then those leaders get to position themselves as experts and authorities. And then it's a slow indoctrination, pretty much.
You want to know something really creepy? You know what you just described?
Always. Parenting? No, what?
You just described Facebook.
Oh, gosh.
Like, for real, with the algorithms. Like, as I'm listening to this, I'm like,
you're right.
That's how Facebook works.
You're right. We tell them what we like.
And then they start showing you only people that are saying things that you like to say and or that you like to hear and have similar interests. And then you have these little Facebook cults and you don't even realize, I've got 1,000 friends. You don't realize you're only interacting with 200 of them because that's who Facebook's showing you.
No, you're so right. And I'll take it one further and say Google is doing the same thing too.
Sure, 100%.
I promise you, one of us will get an ad on our phone when we get off for something that we've talked about right now. Like, they're listening. They know our responses. They're getting to where they're predicting our behavior before we've even done something. That's the new age of marketing. Terrifying.
Have you ever used the creepy fact that your phone is listening to you all the time to find something you're looking for?
Yes.
I did before my camping trick a few weeks ago. So I was looking for a, because we were backpacking and camping completely remote for 6 days. And I was like, I saw somewhere there was a camping grate that rolled up and had like wires and that. And I couldn't find it anywhere online. So I just sat next to my wife and I was like, yes, I'm looking for a backpacking camping grate that rolls up. It's packable. It's got wires. It rolls up, you see, the camping grate. And then popped open Instagram. I'm like, yep, there it is. Showed up,
Bob,
immediately.
You're a genius, but it's so scary, right? Yep. It's like, you're smart enough to use it to your advantage, but it's being used beyond our knowing all the time. It's really scary.
Oh, they've got me so many times. I bought some stupid shit off Instagram because it's like, oh, how'd they know I wanted that?
Same.
But I didn't really need it.
I feel like they're thinking thoughts before I've even had them. It's It's really scary. And yeah, that is cultish.
Well, I watched the Social Dilemma probably too recently ago, but it was like, as you're describing it to me and you're like, yeah, and then, you know, they weed out and get only people to sell. I'm like, holy fuck, that's exactly what all these algorithms do. And they don't, you know, it's not a cult, but it certainly, I mean, I've had, you know, like political discussions with like close family members who have completely like gone from like reasonable in where they were at. I don't care what side of aisle anybody's on, but have gone like extreme crazy. Can't have a conversation with them. And then you finally get in a room with them and speak to them. And they're basically telling you how like anybody who doesn't think this way is an idiot. Everybody thinks this way. And it's almost like, it was like, you need to put your fucking phone down and go to the coffee shop and talk to a real person.
Right, because they're operating in their echo chamber that Facebook and Instagram are helping to create.
Yep.
Right? I mean, those 200 people out of your 1,000 friends most likely are aligning with you on most big issues, with the exception of those couple of like people that just pop up in your feed all the time that rile you up to where you can't ignore it and you have to comment. Like, they're going to keep coming too to keep things interesting. But like, yeah, we're all pretty much in an echo chamber of our own alignment. And I know that's a dangerous place to be. And I think that's how QAnon started, which, by the way, is a cult. So, you know, that's a whole other topic. But 2020 was a breeding ground for new cults that really leveraged people being home and online and lonely.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of people with nothing to do.
Nothing to do and no human connection during a pandemic. I mean, you know, you had True Crime Binge. You got to talk to podcasters, your family. Some people had nobody, you know. Sad.
You know, speaking of... We touched on at the beginning of this. I wanted to circle back to it. So you got into this and you said that you have a very thin skin and have a hard time. So what has that been like for you? Because, you know, once you jump into the space and you're on social media, everybody's got something to say and there's always the negativity out there. How have you handled that?
It depends on the day. You know, I could talk to you today and be like, you know, everyone's entitled to their own thoughts. You can't be for everybody. And that's really where I have landed, is that like, you can't be all things to all people. I think if you can find an audience who appreciates what you do, understands your intention, that's really all you can ask for. And also know for yourself what's motivating you. And if, as long as I feel good about that, then I feel great about what I'm putting in the world and whatever comes back at it. But some days that's a lot of nonsense. And I'm just like, I misunderstood. And I don't know if you know what the Enneagram is. It's like a personality profile, but I'm a 4. I'm a very like feelings oriented person, and being misunderstood is sort of my Achilles heel. So I have a tendency to want to respond to people who say things who I feel have misunderstood my intention or my guest or the topic or the idea. And you can't. It's not a good use of energy.
You can literally lose your mind trying to do that.
You can lose your mind. You can give away your best energy. Like, is this where I should be putting this time and my bandwidth? No. So I'm getting better at it, but it hurts, because at the very least, you know, this is content we're putting out to the world for free. And so if you don't love it, it just feels like you can just move on with your life without saying something. I'll never really get comfortable with the idea of going out of your way to publicly share that you dislike something. And I don't mean have an issue with something that's legitimate or a concern. Sometimes things need to be called out, but when you're just like nitpicking at a host because you don't like their voice or their style or what they're talking about, it just feels not constructive or helpful. I don't know who it's serving. And so I guess the more I can stay in that space, the easier it gets, but it hurts. I don't know. I'm sensitive. I want everyone to like me.
Yeah. I got, you know, I've developed a thick skin over the years. I try not to even read a lot of the comments, but the problem is I do. My other show was a crowdsourced investigation. I have to be part of the interaction sometimes. And I've gotten pretty good about just ignoring it. But every once in a while, and it's kind of the same thing that you said, where it'll be just like somebody will say, well, Bob thinks blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, Bob doesn't, mother.
Don't speak for Bob. Totally.
That's not at all how I feel. And then you feel the need to respond. Then you do. And then it just breaks bad from there. But I'm just always curious for people, especially people that have only been in the industry for a couple of years, like how that's going. I was just talking to Josh Hallmark about it.
I heard that conversation and I related a lot. I love him and I love how he thinks about it. But yeah, I think I'm a work in progress on that, and I'll keep getting a little tougher and I'll keep getting a little less interested, but I'm still new enough that I'm curious enough to know, like, you know, to read the temperature sometimes. And it's usually good. But I also think, you know, your criticism grows in proportion to your success. Mm-hmm. So, you know, massively successful people are going to get a lot of criticism because it's proportionate to all the people who love them. So when I see an uptick in that, I'm like, oh, more people are listening. Like, that's one positive spin you could put on it. Like, the more people chiming up about how they think you're racist, the more people, it means more people listened. So there's that. That's like the upside if I want to be like Pollyanna about it.
Right. I love your, like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for. I was gonna say spiritual hippy dippy something.
Sounds about right.
I love your vibe. Let's just say that.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And with that, we are at about 45 minutes, so I want to get this wrapped up so I can do all the rest of the work that I've got to do this week so that I can see you in the True Crime Time Machine tomorrow at CrimeCon.
In Austin.
Yep. So, ladies and gentlemen, her name is Rebecca Sebastian. The podcast is called Dialogue. Check it out. It'll be your next big true crime binge. And she's got several episodes with some great experts talking about not only NXIVM, other cults, every true crime topic that you can imagine. Over 100 episodes are coming up on 100 episodes. Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, this was so much fun. Thank you. See you tomorrow.
True Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing. Music and artwork by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is TrueCrimeBinge.com. If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. And make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. Thank you so much for listening, and make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge.